Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two of the Hurricane Hotline. Still to come, Brett McMurphy will join us on the show. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., Friday night, Miami and Virginia Tech at Hard Rock Stadium, 7:30 kickoff. We'll be on the air at 3:30 p.m. And certainly the Hurricanes' defensive line will play a big role. Tyler Barron and Simeon Barrow, their numbers are almost identical. Simeon Barrow has 2.5 sacks. Barron has 4.5. Barron was among the nation's leaders in tackles for losses with 7.5. But these two guys have brought physicality to their game. They brought a steadiness to the defensive line. And then off the field, I just think they've just brought a real professional attitude. What have you seen, Don, in Tyler Barron and Simeon Barrow?
The best part about them, Joe, is especially that both of them have gotten better every week. Yeah. Simeon Barrow is, especially last week, what I noticed about him, he went from the Ball State game where he was very, very active, and then he upped it another level. And what I mean by that is he was making plays outside the tackles. And most of the time, those defensive tackles, they don't like to run that hard or that far. But he was doing it, had 6 tackles in that ball game last week, but he's also very, very good against in the pass rush deal, and he matches up well against anybody on the inside. Now, Tyler Barron is, my goodness, you know, I think what's going to be funny is when Bain comes back, I think you're going to see even more production out of Barron, and it's going to be because Bain, they've got to start worrying about him.
Yeah.
So you bring him into the equation, that's going to help. Tyler's going to help Ruben, and Ruben's going to help Tyler. And I think that's the great part about this defense is, you know, Miami's done very, very well on defense, and they've had Brown out and they've had Bain out. And then on the offensive side, you know, you've had Jalen out for a couple weeks too, and they're still plugging away. But I like the combination of what they have on that defensive line. And the best part, in my opinion, is they have such depth. And even in a game where most teams would have been gassed at, in the third quarter, Miami showed no signs of wearing down, and that has a lot to do with the strength and conditioning and Coach Feld, but it also has to do with that defensive line room.
Okay, well, speaking of those two guys, I had a chance to talk with both Tyler Barron and Simeon Barrow earlier today. Welcome back to the show, everyone, as we continue on. And this weekend, it's the Hurricanes and Virginia Tech on Friday night, 7:30 kickoff. We'll be on the air at 3:30 with our pregame show. And joining us now, a guy who's been an instrumental part of the University of Miami's defense, Tyler Barron, joining us. Defensive end Tyler Barron, leading the nation still, I believe, in tackles for losses, but nonetheless a very disruptive force for the University of Miami. Welcome to Coral Gables, and you're off to a great start.
How you doing? I appreciate it. I'm just happy to be here. Really happy that everybody welcomed me how they did, and just excited to be a part of this culture.
How about this? The way this defense is playing right now through the first 4 games, playing at a very high level?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is we can play a ton of guys. I think whenever you get a bunch of guys rotating in, you keep everybody fresh. I think you can do a lot of great things, and just following the coach's lead, I think we've done such so far.
Now, I was going to say, when you're able to get a bunch of guys in, that kind of helps create team, right? It leads to a more unselfish team.
Oh, it definitely does. Leads to people being unselfish, but also builds everybody's confidence at the same time. So I think we're going in the right direction.
I imagine the other night you kind of needed some guys to come in. That was a high tempo offense.
Very, very high tempo. They did a really good job, but I think we did an even better one. So I'm just happy we ended on the way we did.
Yeah, you only gave up one touchdown. It was on a short field. How did you end up really throwing a rope around their offense?
I think everybody was just staying composed and just sticking to our training and not getting overwhelmed by how fast they actually did go. But I think we did a really good job during preparation in the week, and our coaches did a great job preparing us.
Did you feel like, or can you sense when you're starting to wear them down?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely you get a feel for it. But really, we like to just focus on ourselves and not necessarily as much as the opponent, just making sure that we're right. And I feel like if we're prepared, we'll end up on the right side of things.
You've had some new guys on this defense. You're a new guys on this team. Why is this working? Why is it working so far? A lot of you guys came in here, I don't know, maybe the spring or the summer. Right. Some would think, that might be hard to do, but why is this gelling together?
I think you just looked at the head of the snake. I think Coach Chrisball did a really, really good job of preaching and keeping everybody on the same page. And I think whenever you can get guys to follow one singular message and one singular goal, the egos and the personalities, they disappear, really. I think everybody's just really focused right now.
Some would say, we're in an era of where people want to look at their numbers and stats. Right. But ultimately, winning is more fun than anything.
No, yeah, winning is the biggest thing. I think whenever you win, I think there'll be more accolades for anybody to collect. So that's what we're focused on right now.
What was it for you when you came here to Miami? Why was this the right spot for you?
Really, I just think everything here fits with who I am, what I want to be. And I think how hard they push us just kind of aligns with who I am as a person as well. So I just the coaching staff and the culture has really been a big thing for me.
One of your coaches is a Hall of Famer, Jason Taylor. What kind of influence has he had on you?
I mean, he's had a tremendous influence on and off the field, but just continuing to push me each and every day when I have had the little bits of success I've had this far, but just pushing me to go get the rest of the success I can have for the rest of the year.
It's funny, were you aware of what kind of player he was before he became your coach?
Yeah, you definitely know, just being a football guru, but yeah, definitely aware, but I'm just excited that he can pour some of that knowledge into me.
You think you have some of his qualities as a player? He was a guy that would get sacks, strip sacks,
yeah.
Deflections, fumbles, and you're in those areas to make those kind of plays.
Yeah, I just kind of try to play my own game and just be the best version of myself.
All right, this week you got Virginia Tech coming up. This quarterback, another running quarterback, but this guy's a big dude. He's 230-pound quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it does a really, really good job of evading sacks and getting out of pressure. So I think we have to be on our A game.
And your A game so far as a team defensively, been able to really stifle the opponent's run game. How important is that to you?
I mean, it's really, really important to us. Coach G pushes that message each and every day. But just stopping the run and trying to make them one-dimensional.
Tyler Barron is our guest. Coach G, he's an interesting character, isn't he?
He is. A great guy. Great coach.
What do you like about him?
Just like how consistent he is. That's the biggest thing.
What do you like about South Florida? What about this area living here now?
The weather is beautiful. During practice, it can be a little hot, but the people here, I think the people are what make it everything it is.
They call this paradise.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, Tyler. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're now joined by Simeon Barrow, Hurricane defensive tackle, off to a great start. You seem to be really not only being playing well, but you're playing with a lot of joy for the Miami Hurricanes.
Yes, sir. Just getting comfortable with the scheme and just getting comfortable playing around my teammates, and that's all it is.
Coming to Miami, why was that the best decision for you? What was the big thing for you that made you come to Miami?
It was so family-oriented. I love the coaching staff. I love the culture that they have going on. And I just feel like it was just they really bought into this program and bought into the athletes that we got here. And that really made me more motivated to go here.
We're actually doing this interview inside the practice facility. When you look up there, you see a lot of names, historical names of the University of Miami. Did that have any influence on you at all, thinking about some of the greats that have come through here?
Man, I want my name up there. I want my name up there soon, man. So it's just an inspiration. It's just inspirational. Just looking up and you see all these big time names and the people that do it just motivates me to become that as well. And hopefully one day get my name up there.
This defensive line, you're really starting to gel together now, isn't it?
Yes, sir. We're starting to build the chemistry that we was bought in for before camp, and we're starting to build that. I feel like we got more in the tank, but, hey, we're going to keep on chopping and keep on sharpening each other iron.
When did you feel like, hey, we got a chance to be pretty good in this defensive line? We saw it right away against the Gators, but as a unit, when do you think you guys knew you had a chance to be pretty good?
I saw it once in summer workouts, once we started walking through in the communication and the mindset of these guys. These guys got a lot of maturity, and they know what we want, and it just we clicked as soon as we met each other, and I feel like that's when I said to myself, we got the talent, we got the mindset, and I feel like like we was going to be great.
I spoke to Tyler here on the show just a moment ago, and there is something to be said for the unselfishness of the way you guys are handling your business.
Yeah, we know it's not about one person. We know that at the end of the day, it's all 11 people that contribute to one making one good play. All right, no matter what, if one person make a good clean move, shoot, the safeties and the cornerbacks was guarding great. You feel what I'm saying? So we know that it takes all 11 people to make a great play, and we know that no matter what, we just got to count on each other. So, yeah.
Simeon Barrow is our guest. You also come in as an older player. You have some younger guys behind them, behind you. Is that something that you embrace, in that now you become a mentor and a leader to some of those young guys?
Yeah, I embrace that for sure. I embrace that a lot because I want these guys to be great, and I want them to learn all the stuff that I didn't learn when I was a youngin', and I just want them to be great and further in the future, and keep on continue having the best D-line in Miami and just furthering out their career and everything. So,
Simeon, take us through the other night against South Florida, that high-octane offense, some of the things that you guys had to go through because the conditioning was a big part of it, but ultimately you were able to shut them down.
Well, we prepared all week for it. We knew it was going to be a high-tempo game. We knew that they was going to try to tire us, but we made sure we prepared well during practice, and we already had the mentality during the game that we're going to be tired. So what you going to do when you're tired? What you going to do when adversity hits? So we already had that mindset figured out right before the game. So I feel like that helped us a lot.
Now, coming up on Friday night, a different challenge, although somewhat similar. Another running quarterback and another big dude. He's 230 pounds or so. They want to run the football. What are some of your thoughts on them and what jumps out?
Well, they're a great offense, a great quarterback, a good O-line, and I feel like the same mentality that we got every week. 1-0 and keep on respect everybody, but fear none. So I just feel like we're just going to keep on attacking at it and make sure we just keep on building the chemistry and getting better every week.
Now we start the second season, ACC season. So this is the importance. Now we start getting into like playoff talk and all that stuff.
Yes, sir. I'm excited about it, man. I'm excited to see what the ACC is about.
And Friday night at home, be nice to have a gigantic crowd for you, right?
Man, fill the stadium, please. Come on, we're doing it for y'all, Miami. Let's get it, baby. Let's do it. Right. Let's make the toughest environment, the Miami Hurricane environment. All right, let's do it. Hard Rock Stadium, let's do it tonight.
Very good. Simeon, thank you very much. The very best of luck against Virginia Tech.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Simeon Barrow and Tyler Barron. Don, it's nice to have older players. It's nice to have older players that can play. And they can play.
It's like having those bodyguards, Joe.
Yeah. You know, I've been going out there for years with you on the practice field looking for a defensive tackle to stand out. And now they've got a guy in Barrow. You have Justin Scott. And you know the beauty of this right now, and you mentioned Bain coming back. If Miami is going to get to where they want to go, they have to survive an NFL season. And so – you know, when you have as much depth and you can give some guys maybe reduce their reps either in practice or in games, if you're winning comfortably, that's going to help you down the road.
It really is, Joe. And I think part of the philosophy, again, of Coach Cristobal is, and he talked about it on with us earlier, is if a young man's ready to play, he doesn't look at the what game it is. He doesn't look at the opponent. He doesn't look what year they are. He bases it on the production that they've got on the field and how they handle themselves off the field. And I think that's paying off too. And a lot of these, even if it's one drive or even if it's two drives at the end of the game, like we saw happen at South Florida, it pays off. They get on that field. They understand the intensity. They understand what it's like to deal with the noise, to deal with a night game on the road. That stuff all pays off. And I'm with you. If Miami's going to play this NFL season, which I hope they do this year, then they're going to rely constantly on depth, and they're also going to have to just continuing to develop it.
Yep. You got to do whatever it takes to win a game. If that means give Damian Martinez the ball 25 times, you give it to him 25 times. 2 weeks ago, they gave it to him 3 times. But maybe in 3 weeks, they might have to give it to him 25 times. We'll see. But it's going to be a long season, but it certainly does help to have some of the depth that Miami has. Okay, when we come back, we're going to try to squeeze in some of the talk from the coordinators. Brett McMurphy is going to join us at 7:35. The basketball schedule, by the way, gets released tonight, 8 p.m. ACC will release the basketball schedule tonight at 8 p.m. It's already been revealed that Miami will open up ACC play in basketball the same day as the ACC championship. I hope I have to be in two spots at the same time. We'll figure that out. And there's one way to do that. It's with a Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac. You can get anywhere if you purchase a new Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac. It's Miami's luxury dealership, founded over 50 years ago. And you know why they're still going? Because they've got great customer service. They're still going after 50 years because they have built a loyal client base. Why do they do that? Because they stay focused on the customer experience. They know exactly who they are. They know what they're all about. And they know that treating customers like family is the way to go. Jeff Rogers, general manager, top shelf. Ed Williamson, lovely wife, Carol, always get the job done. Hey, Jermaine Chambers, former Hurricane, he's there also. Go ask for Jermaine. He'll get you in a new Cadillac. You will enjoy world-class customer service when you purchase a new Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac. New vehicles are arriving daily, which means Williamson is sure to have the new Cadillac you are looking for. Come in today. Experience Williamson Cadillac's preferred atmosphere. Easy to find, conveniently located on US 1 at 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. Go online first if you would like, WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com, and check out the inventory. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and experience a new Cadillac from your luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Brett McMurphy joins us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll hear from the coordinators here in 1 second. Don Bailey Jr., you meet with the coordinators every week, Shannon Dawson, Lance Guidry. It seems like these two have really settled in here at Miami, and they enjoy their work. They're very good with the chalk, but I feel like they've got their systems maybe right where they want them.
I agree with you, Joe, and I think there's a big benefit of being back for a second year. I mean, I think that when you really break it down and you realize how much terminology and technique is involved in any position group, but especially when you're dealing with the entire offense, when you're coordinating an offense or a defense, you've got to make sure that your message is crystal clear, that it gets delivered to each position group, and then from the position coach, it has to get delivered and taught to the individual. So you've got to have, as much as you want to make things complex for the opponent, you really have to make sure that it's as simple as it can be and can be translated. And I think that's the secret sauce for both of these men. I think they both do a phenomenal job of relaying their information and then figuring out what players are in position to help them execute it.
All right, here's Lance Guidry and Shannon Dawson on this week's opponent, Virginia Tech.
They're dangerous. The quarterback's a really good athlete. He can throw it deep. He can also run. The running back, number 33, is really fast. He breaks tackles. He's a short guy, but he's really strong. And they have a wide receiver, 83, who can really run. So tight end, they involve him in a lot of the passing games. So they have four guys. They have more than that, but that's like the four focal points of their offense, I feel. And they do a lot of quarterback run stuff. So we'll be a little bit different this week because they present different problems. But, we're trying to work through that right now.
Does it help? Obviously, USF's quarterback's a dual threat guy. BT's quarterback's a dual threat guy. Does it help to kind of stick with preparing for?
Nah, it's totally different. They're not a spread type offense like the Baylors of old. You know, they're more power read, a lot of motions involved, play action off of it. It's a different formation. It's a little bit tighter sets, not as open. So it's a little bit different strategy on offense. So we have to be a little different on defense.
Your communication in the secondary appears to be significantly better this year. been in the past. Is that an accurate observation?
Yes, system. I think they're familiar with the system. Even though Mish came in and had to learn the system, it was like something else he had learned. Of course, Harris was his second year in, Markeith, Porter. You know, corners don't have as much to learn as the safeties, but then you have the backers, you know, that's the brain trust as well. So we have more guys familiar with the defense than last year, and that plays into it. The first year is always tough because not only what you put in and installed, each week there might be a wrinkle, and sometimes that's tough. So right now I just think we know the defense a little bit better. So we're able to look at the offenses and really kind of diagnose what they're doing. Don't have to think about what we're doing as much.
Has it been as clean mentally as it's looked?
Sometimes it's fooling, man. Sometimes you think, God, that was a great play, or God, he messed up. And that wasn't even it. It's kind of like the Harris play, you know, against Florida. Everybody thought he was wrong, but he was covering the man tight end. You know, our backer didn't come off the edge. So he looked like he made a mistake, but he didn't. So, you know, you look at every year, at the end of the year, you look at cut-ups. And you look at your calls that you made, and you try to find calls that look right, and there's always something wrong with a call. There's always they didn't, but that's defensive football. If you play hard sometimes, you're supposed to be in a gap, but the ball didn't go there, you get out of your gap and you run. I always say the ball's the issue, you know, and it's like that forever on defense. The guards will take you to a play, but you can't go until the running back goes there. So they just an indicator which way he should go. So
talked about how you set a goal every game of getting a third quarter shutout. I think you've done that now in three or four games. Why do you feel like this group has been so good at executing that?
I think communication. I think we probably solve problems a little bit quicker on defense, and that's not just because of experience with our players or me. Our coaches also know what we're doing. And there's not a lot of times we have to meet together. You know, Jason knows exactly what we're going to do with the defensive front once we put the game plan in. D-Nick knows exactly what we're going to do at the linebacker position. And then he says, Lance, what if they do this? Can we tweak it like this? I said, yeah. Chevis has been with me before, so we know the defense better as a staff, which helps us on game day be able to change at an instant like that. JT said, Lance, how about this? I say, go with it. Let it play. So it's just kind of how we communicate now, because we know about – they know what I want and what my vision is, and they work from within that. And plus, their experience from being other places has also helped me as well, putting things into my system.
I mean, they're very physical. I mean, they got a lot of returning starters. They've played a ton of ball together. D-line-wise, I mean, you know, 52 leads the conference in sacks. Not that we've had a lot of conference games, but at this point, you know, they're – their ability to get to the quarterback and affect the quarterback has been proven. And so they're very active. They're aggressive. You know, again, they're one of those defenses that, you know, kind of obsess about stopping the run. And their safeties are get downhill and get active in the run game. So we got to do a good job at receiver, at digging those guys out and blocking the seventh guy and sometimes eighth guy at times. But they are very aggressive and physical. I mean, it'll be our biggest challenge to date, to be honest with you.
When you got up two touchdowns in the second half.
Do what?
When you got up two scores.
Yep.
Saturday, USF did what you would expect them to do. The corner would gamble. They, you know, they're trying to make plays.
Yeah.
How do you explain how Cam handles those moments? I mean, I know some of it's film and recognition, but how much of it is just natural? Like the ability to stay calm and see it.
Yeah,
you can't really teach that, I don't think, or can you?
No, I mean, he sees things in the back end that most people don't see, to be honest with you. I mean, that specific play you're probably talking about, the throw to Sam, you know, I mean, that corner misstepped, you know what I mean? And I asked him when we were watching that tape, and basically that's what he saw. You know, the corner made a mistake, and he stepped up and triggered cover two to us, and he knew it was coming in. Now, you know, they do try to disguise cover two a lot, South Florida does, and you know, through film study, a lot of times when you try to disguise it really good, the safety don't get to where he needs to get. And so that was one of those things that we talked about through the week, that if we could catch him in cover two and they were really trying to disguise it, we could take advantage of it, but sometimes those opportunities don't come up in a game. It came up on that specific play, which was good because we really needed it, right? I mean, we really needed that play.
Jim, what's going through your mind when you call play and Cam goes up to the line of scrimmage and starts pointing and telling the guys exactly where the play is coming. And then
I didn't really see that in real time.
And then works.
Yeah. I didn't really see that in real time. But that's, you know, that kind of answers your question earlier. I mean, I look at things through a different set of glasses when we talk about run game, because that specifically, I mean, we get down there and, you know, they pretty much know we're running it, and we know we're running it, and he tells them where we're running it, and our old line just blows them off the ball, you know. So, I mean, we can be physical too, you know, and so, you know. But I didn't see that in real time. I saw it on film, so it was just one of those deals.
Well, it one of those deals ended up in the end zone. Shannon Dawson, Lance Guidry. When we come back, Brett McMurphy will join us on the Action Sports Network. By the way, happy birthday to Mario Cristobal, 54 today, his birthday. He'll want to celebrate on Friday if the Canes beat Virginia Tech. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr. back with Brett McMurphy right after this.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome back to the show. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., Josh Darrow will join us on Friday night from Hard Rock Stadium. He'll be down on the sidelines. Kickoff at 7:30. Our pregame begins at 3:30 in the afternoon. Okay, joining us now on the show, Action Sports Network, Brett McMurphy, one of the great insiders in college football. Brett is with us. Brett, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening. Good evening, guys. Good to talk to you.
Appreciate you joining us. I want to jump into the University of Miami in a second. However, I want we do have a lot of Dolphin fans that listen to this show. And so you got to go to Brett McMurphy's Twitter page, because you have video up there of Uwe Von Schaumann when he was kicking for Oklahoma. And, you know, Von Schaumann then went on to kick for the Dolphins.
I know. I was just a young pup in Oklahoma. I was an OU fan back then. My parents went to that game. I still remember that game, and it was hysterical when Von Schaumann, the band is playing, blocked that kick, and he's got his arms going back and forth to the tune of the band, and he sits up there and boots it right through the uprights. And, yeah, as I tweeted, the biggest field goal in the history of the University of Oklahoma, and that says a lot. But yeah, those are the good old days for the Sooners. They'd like to be experiencing that than what's going on there now. But yeah, I forgot Uwe had went down and played with the Dolphins. But yeah, he was a legend at OU, no doubt.
Yeah. By the way, the other thing that jumps out in that video is that place kickers at that time were allowed to use a tee. A lot of young people wouldn't know that they kick field goals off of tees. At any rate. The University of Miami, what are your thoughts on where Mario Cristobal is with his program right now?
Well, before the season and the preseason, I vote in the AP poll. I was the only one to vote, put Miami in the top 10 on my preseason ballot. And a lot of that was based on, you know, conversations I had with Mario in the off season about what Miami had coming back, what Miami had gotten through the portal. Obviously, you're well aware of all the additions, Cam and Martinez, et cetera, et cetera. And I just really felt that, you know, the amount of talent that Miami had, specifically on the offensive and defensive lines, would be a big difference. I know the national narrative, the lazy take is, you know, well, they've had some late issues in game management, and yeah, okay, that happened, yeah, but still, you can't take away with the talent they have. And I got to see it up firsthand. I was at the USF Miami game, and yeah, Miami looked as good as I thought they'd be. I have them, I think, up to 5 or 6 on my ballot now. But yeah, none of that matters, because now you've got the conference schedule to take care of. I picked Miami to win the ACC. And right now, I think it's clear cut. It's either them or Clemson. Clemson's obviously a lot better than people thought after that first game against Georgia. But, you know, Miami's in a great position. And, this it's kind of funny that this is Mario's third year at Miami and kind of his third year at Oregon, you include when he was defensive coordinator there, could be on similar paths. Oregon's third year, they won the Pac-12 title, went to the Rose Bowl. You know, could Miami win the ACC and be headed to a college football playoff? We'll have to find out. But certainly through the first third of the season, they certainly looked the part.
Brett, how do you think the nation is taking Cam Ward? When are they going to start putting him to the forefront, or are they have already put him to the forefront of being a Heisman candidate or a favorite?
Yeah, according to the experts in Vegas, he is the favorite right now. And, you know, I don't like to, if people, you know, people wager on Heisman winners. I don't like to pick anyone this early because I just feel there's too many things can happen. And the way that I have a vote in the Heisman, but I think, not me personally, but I think overall, Heisman voters, they wait till the last minute. They wait to see who's going to make the playoff or among the best teams. And then who has the best Heisman moment or best game, you know, basically the last week of the season a lot of times. You know, nowadays with all the stats being crazy, you know, the stats I think now are meaningless. You know, they really are. Unless you're just putting up some ridiculous numbers that nobody else can compare to, the stats are kind of meaningless. So with all that being said, it's hard for me to find somebody else other than I think Cam or Nico at Tennessee's quarterback. If Tennessee splits against Alabama and Georgia, they play both of them and say they go 11-1. I think he will be in New York. If Cam leads Miami to the ACC title, I think he'll be in New York. But there's always some surprises. We've had September Heisman winners in the past, Denard Robinson. Travis Hunter won it last year, supposedly in September. We saw how that ended up. So right now he's the favorite. And the bad news with that is when you're the favorite, all anyone wants to do is tear you down. It's not the four touchdowns you threw. It's the one interception you threw. So can he survive that? We'll have to find out. But look, if Miami wins the ACC, he's going to be in New York, no doubt.
I don't even know. What is the date of the Heisman this year? It might be the same time as a playoff.
No, it's not. It's the second Saturday in December,
and then it's the in between week, right? The in between week.
Playoff is the third week, and if Miami wins the ACC, they don't have to worry about that third week because they'll have a first round bye. So, but if they don't get a bye, they would play the week after the Heisman.
Right, right. You are right about the narrative with Mario. It's interesting to me. Every time I do a national radio show, someone still brings up the Georgia Tech game. Then I have to point out, well, you know, he did win the Rose Bowl. So, he has been able to do that. Let's move away from Miami for a moment. Big game this week, big as they come, Georgia and Alabama. What do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time Alabama's been a home underdog since 2007. The backup quarterback on that Alabama team, this baby-faced freshman named Greg McElroy. So that's how long it's, you know, 17, 18 years since Alabama's been a home underdog. I think the best thing, if you like Georgia here, I think the best thing that could have happened was Georgia falling from number one to number two, because now Kirby's got something to really focus on. You know, look, Alabama's going to play the underdog roll-up. Georgia's going to play that nobody's giving us a chance, even though they're favored. And now they're ranked number two. You know, this is the last six meetings between these teams. Five of them have either been in the SEC championship or in the national championship. So this is a rare on-campus game between the teams. And also, I'm fascinated to see how Georgia responds in this atmosphere against Alabama, because they played in Tuscaloosa in 2020. That was a COVID season, so there were no fans. This also, you have to go back to 2007, the last time Georgia has played before fans in Tuscaloosa. So Georgia team has not experienced anything like they're gonna see Saturday night. You know, the question is, which Georgia team's going to show up? The team that thumped Clemson early, or the team that that slept walk or struggled against Kentucky. I hate to go against Alabama even without Saban, but you know, this game's set up like the Super Bowl. The Vegas sportsbook put the odds out, you know, a week before the game, since both teams had an open date, almost like a college football Super Bowl. But obviously the winner of this is in great shape to win the SEC title. The loser, don't feel too bad about them. I'm pretty sure they're going to find a way into that 12-team playoff, getting an at-large bid.
We were able to watch some of Joe and I were able to catch a lot of that Alabama USF game. And what's your thoughts about Alabama without Coach Saban? Is there anything that's a glaring difference? The discipline, the talent. You know, it took Alabama what till 10 minutes to go into the fourth quarter at home to really put USF away, but they did it, and they did it in a big way. But is there anything that's sticking out to you about how the transition has gone?
You know, not really. The thing that I wanted to see is, I mean, obviously it's going to be different. I mean, we've already seen the difference in how, you know, one, he lets the assistant coaches talk, which Saban didn't do. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad that Saban didn't let the assistants talk. You guys are aware of that from his time with the Dolphins. But the thing that I was intrigued with, and I'm still not sure, is how much different Jalen Milroe would be a quarterback with Kalen DeBoer. We saw what Kalen DeBoer did with Michael Penix last year. You know, totally changed him into a different quarterback. Overall talent-wise, they probably weren't good enough to get the national title game, yet they did. So that's what I want to see what happens with Milroe. It is a different style. It is a different way of doing things, but Alabama fans don't care. They want the same success. So as long as Alabama wins, then DeBoer's fine. If he loses, then I'm sure he'll find a few for sale signs posted in his front yard. But I love the hire. He's been a head coach at multiple stops, coached 122 games. He's lost 12 out of 122. I don't care if you're playing video games or coaching in the backyard. 110-12, that's a pretty good record, so a guy can coach.
Brett McMurphy is our guest. Brett, what's going on with Lincoln Riley and USC? They went into Michigan last week, and Michigan didn't throw a pass. They damn near went back to like 1972 football.
Well, when they switched to Alex Orji, that was basically the strategy. Davis Warren, the quarterback who had started the first three games, threw six interceptions in the first three games. Well, I knew there was no way that Alex Orji would throw six interceptions because Michigan wouldn't attempt six passes. I mean, that's just the way they're going to have to win. Even though I still think USC should have won this game, they gave up some late explosive plays to Michigan on offense. You know, USC has made incredible strides defensively. If you guys saw any of USC's games last year, Michigan would have ran for 8,000 yards if this game was played last year. They've shored up the defense. The offense under Lincoln Riley is always going to be good. I still think USC is a sleeper to get to the playoff. I don't. Obviously, now they're, you know, probably not a good bet to win the Big Ten, but I think they can finish in the top 11, top 12, and have a real shot to get to the playoff. Miller Moss has been pretty incredible so far this season at quarterback, and we know Lincoln Riley's track record. With quarterbacks for Michigan, I'm still not sold on them. I thought they would, you know, I obviously didn't think they were going to repeat, but I just thought this was going to be a 7 or 8 win team. We'll have to see if that's what they finish up as. I still think, you know, you described it perfectly. They don't attempt to pass. You can't do that against everybody and be successful. You're putting too much pressure on your defense, and at some point, that dam is going to burst. But, you know, if Sherrone Moore can get Michigan to the Big Ten title game, I think he should be Big Ten Coach of the Year because they lost 16 players in the NFL. They lost Harbaugh. To lose all of that talent and get to the Big Ten title game would be a huge achievement. However, I think they're going to end up somewhere about 7-5 or 8-4.
Mm-hmm. When we stay in the state of Florida for a second, when you go to Florida State, who would think a preseason Florida State would have gotten their first win? It would take them till the end of September to do that. Where is this program right now, and if they got it back on the right track after a victory on Saturday?
Yeah, I don't think a close win against Cal puts you back on the right track. I don't know. I'm as stunned as anybody else out there. Like, I didn't, you know, my preseason AP ballot, I had Florida State probably lower than most people. I had them around 18 or 19. I didn't think they'd be as good as they were last year. I rated them kind of around with Michigan. So I figured Florida State probably finished 9-3. Actually, their win total in Las Vegas was 9.5. They lost all three games. So actually, they're the first team to clinch going under their win total after the first 3 weeks. The issue is at quarterback, and DJU is not the answer. And they took a chance on that. I know that Florida State wanted Cam Ward. They didn't get him. Miami got him. And, you know, they made a decision to go with DJU, and he simply has not performed. They've also got a bunch of issues on the defensive line. You know, Pete Thamel of ESPN reported before the season this is going to be one of the nation's best defensive lines. Obviously, he was wrong about that. So what's going to happen with Florida State? Right now, my bowl projections, I don't have Florida State getting 6 wins. Unless there's just some drastic improvement offensively that I haven't seen yet, you know, I don't see how that's going to happen. And I think part of it also is I think they are pressing so much. You know, the expectations of wanting to, you know, get back to the playoff after what happened last year and this getting snubbed by the selection committee. And then now since they lose one, they lose two. And now I just think they're pressing so much and they're really struggling. But, you know, offensively, they can't score enough right now to win many games. And now you go play SMU and Florida State's almost a touchdown underdog. You know, I'm sure there's no alligator tears down in Miami over this, but yeah, I'm stunned that they're struggling this much. But it kind of shows you if you don't get the right quarterback in there, how much that can really impact a program. And we just look at Miami and Florida State as example 1A and 1B on how much that impacts a school.
One more question for you, and that is, well, stay in the state of Florida. The Gators. Now, I find myself in the very unusual position here. We have to root for the Gators to win. It makes the Miami win look better. I always get tired of when Miami beats Florida, then the response is, oh, Florida wasn't any good. But what's going to happen there with the Gators? They have this, you know, monstrous schedule coming up. I don't think their talent's that terrible. I think their talent's pretty good. I think, in fact, if they were inside the ACC, they would not be a bottom team in the ACC. It's just they've got a uphill battle with the schedule they have, and which might lead them to another coaching change.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if they don't make a coaching change. And you're right. I mean, before the season, is the power ratings, you know, take the schedule out, but just the actual power rating of the program and the team, recruiting, et cetera. Florida was a top 25, ranked in the top 25 based by the power ratings. But then you look at that schedule, and it's not easy. And Miami thumped them. You know, A&M thumped them. I mean, they beat Mississippi State. That's really not saying much. Toledo beat Mississippi State. So they're off this week, and then they start their death march with UCF at Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. Sounds like one, maybe two wins in that group. So you're looking at, you know, 4-8, 5-7, I think the high water mark. Yeah, if you're rooting for Florida, I feel for you. But I think, again, the best news is Miami doesn't need to rely on how good Florida is. If they win the ACC, they're going to be in the playoff. Where it gets tricky is if Miami doesn't win the ACC and you're trying to get in a large bid, then obviously your opponent's success matters a lot. But, you know, I like Billy Napier. I think he's a good guy. But for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out there. I think a lot of people thought it would. He was highly coveted by a number of SEC teams through the years, and then he finally opted on going to Florida. But guys, that just shows how crazy, you know, these coaching hirings are. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, this guy's a home run hire. This guy's a great hire. And then you look 3 years down the road and you're like, get this guy out of here. We need somebody else in here. And the you know, poster child for this is Scott Frost going to Nebraska. I was as guilty as anyone. I thought that was the, you know, one of the greatest hires, you know, in recent history, going back to the alma mater, what he had did at UCF, what he had did at Oregon as a coordinator. And then it just didn't work out. So that just shows, you know, when you're hiring these guys, you're really not sure what you're getting until you get a few years down the road. That's why, you know, I'm really impressed with what Mario's done at Miami, because he's built that foundation and he's got those guys all going in the same direction. You know, when a lot of schools can't say that. And now here's Florida. They've got an interim president. They've got an AD who hired Napier and the same AD who hired and fired Dan Mullen. So now are you going to let this guy hire the next guy? And I'm sure you guys have seen it too, but it's no secret. Florida's biggest donors, they want Lane Kiffin. Well, there's one problem with that. Kiffin's probably going to be in the playoff and be playing into January. So do you wait that long to name a head coach? We'll have to find out. But, yeah, certainly for Florida fans, this has been a rough year. If Napier can win and get to a bowl game with that schedule, he'll still be around next year. But I'm just afraid it's too tough. And I think you'll start to see a lot of injuries creep in as they play these tougher games and get beat up a little more. And, yeah, this is, without question, the hardest schedule in the history of college football, which is saying something.
Brett, you've been generous with your time. Thank you. Where can our listeners find all of your work? I know Twitter. Where else can they find your fine insider information?
Yeah, you can follow me at Twitter at Brett_McMurphy. I link all my stories off of that, or you can go to actionnetwork.com. Or if you want to get all the scores updates for college football, NFL, Major League Baseball, heck, golf if you want, download the Action Network app. It's, you know what, it's free for the next hour to all listeners. Well, I'm kidding. It's always free, but it sounds better if it sounds like it's a short-term deal. It's free, and you can get a lot of information on your favorite sports, your favorite teams, and, you know, give you some information so you're kind of a smarter person when you're sitting around with buddies having a beer talking about stuff, and you can say, oh, you know what, did you know this? So, but I appreciate you asking me. Just can you make one promise for me?
Yeah, sure.
Just make sure I'm invited to the national title parade when Miami has it down there, okay?
Well, you are you'll be number one on the list, but you are speeding a little bit now. But we're hoping for one, I can tell you that.
Well, the good news is I still think to win the ACC, and I don't know if this is bad news, but the challenging thing is that first playoff game for the ACC champ, if that's Miami, will be against either the SEC runner-up or against the Big Ten runner-up. So it's not going to be an easy game right out of the gate, but it's better than the alternative, watching it from home.
If they win the ACC, they'll have home field advantage.
Well, they play in a bowl game. They wouldn't play the first game at home.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we missed the first
round. Yeah, so they get the benefit of not playing the first round game, but their first game would be against the SEC or Big Ten runner-up, because that will be the highest-ranked team that didn't win their conference championship.
All right, very good. All right, well, you're on the invite list, no question about that. If we win championship, have a parade, you're here. We'll drink beers.
I'll drive down from Tampa. Let's do it.
All right, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That's Brett McMurphy with us. If the University of Miami wins a championship and they have a parade, Don, I don't know. We're gonna hire a truck, a flatbed truck, and we're gonna put you on the flatbed truck and you just drive through the crowd in your pose.
I think it's a good idea, Joe. I'll wear my hurricane birthday suit. It'd be a fun deal. Well, you know what? It's nice that we're winning, man. That's the best part about it, and I'm happy it's really for Coach Cristobal, because he's put in more hours, and that whole staff. I'm happy for them too. They put a lot into it, and the leadership of this University of Miami has made sure that they went out and did everything they could do to make this happen, and it's working.
Well, a new season starts on Friday night, and I guarantee you, I can't guarantee that McMurphy will have a spot in a parade at the end of the year, but I can guarantee you this, and anybody listening to this show, Miami's going to get Virginia Tech's best game or best effort.
Well, I think it's safe to say right now that's the way it is for the intel from now to the end of the year. When Miami's on top, you know what's coming. Everybody wants to knock them off, and especially, with Cam Ward having the year that he's having and the defense doing what they're doing, I'm with you. It's going to be – you're going to get the best shot every week now.
All right. I will see you on Friday afternoon at Hard Rock Stadium. Got a couple more days of game prep, and I'll see you on Friday.
Okay, buddy. Thank you. I enjoyed the show. Have a good evening.
All right, that's Don Bailey Jr. Thanks to Tyler Barron for joining us, and Simeon Barrow, Brett McMurphy, Mario Cristobal. That was a good show. Heard from the coordinators. A lot of fun. Trevor Harris has been our producer. If you missed any of this stuff tonight, well, you can go to the website or tomorrow in Hurricane Rewind, and we'll do it all over again tomorrow night. We will see you or talk to you on Friday from Hard Rock Stadium. 3:30 pregame, 7:30 kickoff. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night.